Te reo Māori was systematically and violently removed from the indigenous people of this country. Its decline and near extinction was only halted and reversed by major initiatives introduced in the 1970s and 80s, struggles that were led by Māori. In 1972, a petition was presented to Parliament to promote the language. That year, a Māori Language Day was introduced, and in 1975, this became a Māori Language Week. In 1978, the first officially bilingual school opened in Ruatoki in Te Uruwera. In 1982, the first Kōhanga Reo opened in Lower Hutt, beginning the Kōhanga Reo movement, which has been credited with ensuring the next generation held on to the language by immersing young tamariki in the reo. Kura Kaupapa full immersion schooling followed, and the first Māori-owned Māori language radio station, Te Reo Oponeke, went on air in 1983. In 1985, the Waitangi Tribunal heard the Te Reo Māori claim, which asserted that Te Reo was a taonga that the Crown was obliged to protect under Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Māori was made an official language of New Zealand under the Māori Language Act in 1987. Every single one of these initiatives was fought for. It did not come easy. It did not come lightly. And the resistance it faced was incredibly racist at every point. The systematic removal of the language was a conscious effort by colonisers to enforce assimilation to the English culture that was now the majority. Today, Te Reo Māori has had a resurgence, but it remains at risk. Today, unlike in 1984, when Nida Glavish was demoted for saying kia ora as a national telephone tolls operator and refusing to use only formal English greetings, today we hear kia ora regularly in both formal and non-formal spaces. We hear it every night on the 6 o'clock news. On BFM, you'll hear Ata Māori, good morning, as well as Kinga Āhuatanga o Tangaroi tēnei rā to introduce the surf report. On Radio New Zealand, you hear all reporters signing off saying aho, which means I or me, as in Ko Lillian Hanley aho. In fact, this was the very reason for multiple BSA complaints against RNZ. So, while it has become commonplace to hear, some people still find it, funnily enough, alarming. It's here where our discussion today begins. Broadly speaking, as a broadcaster myself, I believe it is fairly straightforward to acknowledge not only an official language of Aotearoa New Zealand, but the indigenous language of this country. And, especially, as a Pākehā from this country, acknowledging the history and doing something about it to undo the damage which has been done and continues to have effects. This is a personal discussion, but our identity as peoples of this country is personal, and is largely informed by the media. Who is it that we choose to be, and how are we going to achieve that? Guyon Espina is one of the presenters of Morning Report on Radio New Zealand. For some time now, he has been weaving te reo into his work wherever he can. He starts the show with a mihi in the reo and introduces himself as well.
People who listen to Morning Report might hear a bit of that. I try and mix it up in the mornings. Maybe I'll say, kei te whakarongo mai koe ki te reo rarangi o Aotearoa. You're listening to Radio New Zealand, mo te hotaka o te ata, ko Guyon Espina tōku ingoa for the programme of the morning, or for Morning Report. I'm Guyon Espina. I might flash it up a bit and say, tēnā tātou, kua whakarauika mai, e raro i te tuanui o tāne whakapiripiri, which is really like saying welcome to you under the cloak of this special building, I suppose, or
that's
which
my
is
favourite.
A bit more sort of metaphorical, I suppose.
When he first started to do this, he got a lot of flack. People didn't like it. At BFM, we have also attempted this and also received some flack. About a month ago, I happened to see Guyon in the supermarket and thought I'd ask whether he was interested in having a conversation on air about it all. In deferring to my tuakana, or older sibling in the broadcaster sense, I wanted to know more about his reasons for learning Te Reo Māori. Turns out, using te reo on the radio was a secondary priority to his lifelong commitment to te ao Māori, largely influenced by his family and his hope to communicate with his daughter in te reo. Oh, it's a bit nerve-wracking when you interview someone who's like better at what you do.
Certainly when you're not when you're talking about the language. content-wise, I think you've got the edge on this.
Okay. Well, we'll see how we go. So, back to introductions for Morning Report.
I like to mix it up, and, you know, we've done the simple greetings for a long time on Radio New Zealand, as they have done on other news programs, kia ora, and going further than that. But once we found, let's push it out and extend it and try and, expand our use of the reel and weave it into more of what we're doing. And so I guess that's really where the journey started.
A lot of things that I want to pick up on there. One, that you have someone that you run things by. I also have someone that I run things by, and it does definitely give you a bit more of security or safety around that, because they've obviously got more of the expertise than you might or I might. And it's interesting, though, I've had a conversation with him once saying that he was sort of like, don't necessarily be afraid to mix it up, to make your own things up, to claim it as yours and use words and phrases that you know apply to this. Because every time I do ask him, it comes from me probably translating something, and it's a really basic translation, and it becomes a boring thing to say. And then he sort of flips it around and does the metaphorical thing, because the language is metaphorical and it sounds so much better. And then you're like, oh, right. Anyway, we're going off topic. Can you start just by telling us a bit about you and how you came to learn Te Reo Māori? What was that journey?
Yeah, well, the journey started in an unlikely place, which is Christchurch, I suppose, for this subject. I mean, I guess, I grew up in Christchurch and had very little exposure to Reo Māori and very little exposure to Te Ao Māori in those days. And, so when I started learning the language, which was a couple of years ago, I sort of had to unlearn a lot of the ways that we said things back in those days. You'd have beautiful places like Taitapu, which were called Taitap, and that's how they were said in those days. And so there was a lot of unlearning to be done, I guess, as life went on. But I married a Māori woman, and we've got a daughter who's 5 now, so that's been part of the journey too. And so I sort of messed around with books and stuff for a little while, and then I thought 2 years ago I'll get seriously into this. We wanted our daughter to be fluent in her language, and she's just started at a bilingual school here in Auckland, and so that was a big motivation too. And so I started through Te Wānanga o Aotearoa for 2017, 2018 is my, I've finished my second year, and then I guess I sort of weave various aspects of my life together. There's the family bit, and there's the broadcasting bit too. And it was a case of, learn a little, share a little, learn a bit more, share a bit more. Mm. And I thought that, hey, while I'm learning, I can, and I've got a mic, and when I hit the red light, then no one can shut me up. And, I'll use this and share this beautiful language if I can.
So was that part of it sort of secondary to your already present obligation to your whānau?
Yeah, no, totally it was. And that's a good question, and you're totally right, it was. So that was first. First was, I want to learn this language, I don't want my daughter getting away and speaking a language that I don't understand. I wanted to learn it for a while. And so, yeah, obligation to family is a good way to think about it, or just inspiration from that, or, not too sure how to define it, but it just felt right. Mm. It felt right to do that. And, I thought, well, as I'm learning, why don't I try and weave this into what I do in the morning, which is get up and talk on radio. And if it is an official language, and if it is part of our land, why don't we use it? So that's been our kaupapa, is like, let's use it.
Mm. I'll come back to that sort of the other obligation to the land and to radio, but I do want to touch on the fact that your daughter came into it, because I have 3 younger siblings who are Māori, and they're the people that I speak Māori to most often. They're the ones who we've all kind of got this commitment in the family, because it's for future generations. Mō ngā tamariki mokupuna e hara mai ana. It's for them, right? We actually have to maintain this in order for them to have it at all. And so I sort of, speaking English to young kids for me is very foreign. I don't often, and I used to teach swimming. It was really strange, because that was the first time I had to on a large scale speak English all the time to kids, and so I'd try and kind of incorporate some Māori as well. And what I did find actually that the kids knew a lot, because it is more and more common now in schools, both bilingual or full immersion, and mainstream schools, to have some deal, which I it was quite endearing anyway for me. Has learning another language shifted your thinking or paradigms at all?
Yeah, totally. I think that the way languages influence your thoughts are quite profound. Even the way language is structured has an influence on your thought process, I think. You often find the passive voice adopted in the reel, and you know, so you are less at the centre of it. Things happen to you, or you know, it's less sort of whakahihi, you know, you're less sort of promoting yourself. And I think that's a big part of from what I've experienced in Te Ao Māori, that you know, that isn't received too well if you do that. And so I think that's quite interesting. Because when you structure a language, it's going to reflect the thoughts and the cultural practices of the people who speak it, right? So I found that that quite interesting. And I think also when you are trying to express things and, you know, there aren't direct translations. You and I were talking off air about that, how it's such a poetic language. And, you know, the way that you perceive and try and explain things naturally changes when you're using another language. So I think that's an exciting thing for all of us, and a real deficit if we remain, as we sadly have been, quite a monolingual country.
Which is so strange in a global sense. Most people are multilingual.
Totally. I mean, you know, I mean, having two languages would be minimum in most countries. Exactly. And if you're in Europe, then it'd probably be a baseline of about three as you start. And some would be considered unusual if they probably got above sort of five languages. So, yeah, we haven't done well. And in the past, we've said, oh, well, if there's going to be another language, why don't you do French or Spanish or German and you tutu around with that at school? Why not learn the language of the land, the language of Aotearoa? So, you know, that's my only regret is that I started so late. You know, I was 45 before I started really tackling it properly. So, you know, but I guess my message out there to people who've got a few years on the clock is that it's never too late.
Start now. also, just touching on your whakahihi point, so that the idea that, you know, you're being opened, or the language does sort of allow you to, it opens up that world, right, where you are able to understand more about tikanga and te ao Māori itself, not just the language. And it's almost humbling for someone perhaps who has been raised in a monocultural world.
It's totally humbling. It really is, and that's why it's good for the soul as well. That's one of the many reasons, but it is good for the soul. You're in command, especially if you're in the media and broadcasting. This is the language you use, and you're used to being in command of that. It's pretty good experience to you go try do that in the reel and see how you get on. You know, I mean, it is a humbling experience, which is one of the good things, right? You know, put yourself into that position, but also just for your experience of New Zealand, Aotearoa, I mean, you know, once you start learning the language, a lot of things start to make more sense. And once you start learning what words mean, and then you look at place names, you know, and you know that weta means hot or burnt, and you know what ere means, then you can't look at ere weta the same, especially once you find out the mythology or otherwise about someone rolling over into a campfire at night. Whack it into MaoriDictionary.co.nz and you'll find out what I mean. But I grew up with my river, the closest big river, you know, Waimakariri. I had no idea. We called it Waimak. You know, right. Just cold water. So, like those, and a lot of people say, oh, I don't, you know, what's the utility of the language? They'll be probably living on a street with a Māori name. They'll be living in an area with a Māori name. Why was it called that? What does this tell us? There's so much that sort of unfurls. And look, I'm still at the beginning of my journey. I'm not here to lecture anyone about it. I just think curiosity is a good thing. You know, I don't have a big, you know, I don't beat people with a moral stick about why they should pick up the deal, but I just think as your curiosity unfurls, there's a whole lot about it which starts to make sense, and you start to look at the stories, look at origins of words and whakatauki and taiparapara and a whole lot of other, you know, even the kianga and just a whole lot of the other structures, and you look, and then woven into that it will be stories and that teach us a lot about the land and about our people. So, yeah, I just think there's a lot to unpick there.
The moral stick argument, the thing is, the moral stick is there. It's quite obviously a moral issue, perhaps. But I had a conversation with Te Moti Kairetu, which he begrudgingly did in English for me, about, you know, what status the language is at, and he is a lot more hopeful than Te Wharehuia Milroy, for example. I went to a kōrero where Te Wharehuia basically said to us, kei te pari o te rua te reo e tūana, so the reo is standing at the foot of its grave and it's on you guys, basically. Whereas Te Moti, he sort of responded to that saying, well, I don't necessarily agree, because I think that there is more and more now people willingly coming to the reo and wanting to engage with it on a very real way. And that, for him, I think, was something, rather than the beating with the moral stick, perhaps, is getting people to understand the value in it and to understand how beautiful it is and that you can kind of love it, really. And that brings you to learning it.
Yeah, and that's been part of the strategy. And that might even be putting to imbuing it with a greater sense of planning than it actually happened for us at Radio New Zealand. The thought behind it is, you know, try and weave it in and try to make it fun without lecturing people about it, because people get turned off for it very quickly. And you know, this is arupahu auraki for us. This is mainstream media, largely. So, but if you say, koe ma harahare ho ma, don't worry, people, don't worry, my friends, or kia ata haere in the traffic, or te mata pai huereri mo tira nei, this is the weather forecast for today, and you just do that, and you translate it, then if you do it again and again, then these phrases and words come into people's ears all the time, you know, and hopefully that can interest them, or that can be the start of their journey. That's all I'm hoping to do. You know, we're not expecting people to become language experts by listening to it, and I'm, you know, just a beginner myself. But I do think that we can do it in a way that's encouraging and fun. Normalise isn't a nice word, but it's a useful word.
I do struggle with that word.
It isn't a nice word, but I suppose if you mean I can use these words in a normal conversation and feel okay about it and just feel like it's okay, then that's what I mean, I think. And I think that's important. Mm. And you're only going to get there if you do it again and again and again. Like, no one's going to look at you in the workplace and say, kia ora, you know, kai te pihe koe, you know, how are you going? That, you know, if you do that every morning at work and then just translate, then after a while it becomes natural. And you need to do that a lot for it to become natural. I guess that's part of...
Even for yourself saying it?
Yeah.
Or for other people hearing it?
Both, I think. We've part of this journey for all of us is for these phrases and words in this language to become a part of normal conversation, to hear it on the streets, to hear it in the shops, you know? I hear tītū mō te tapu tapu tākoro. How much for the toy? Go into a shop and say that. I do. You don't have to. People say, oh, I haven't got anyone to speak Māori to. Go in and use it. Use it in the petrol station, in the shop. You can translate it. It's okay. No one's going to look at you. I mean, they might be a bit kōmingo-mingo, but confused at the start. But if you just translate it, you're fine. And then you're using it. And then you've said it 50 times. Do you know what I mean? And then you're away with your own journey. Because the whakamā about it, the shyness about it, is a massive part for people. because language is so intrinsic to who we are. You know, you talk about getting on stage or speaking in front of people. For most people, in any language is hard, right? So if you switch to a language you're learning, the fear of verbally making a mistake is huge. It's probably similar to the fear of getting beaten. You know, it's big, it's real. And so you need to do that a lot for it to become, and we use normalized, or to become okay. I don't know, you pick your word, but that's why we need to do it a lot.
This might be a bit of a jump, but I'm going to loop it back. The idea of fear, now I understand it, and I do have time for people who are afraid of getting it wrong, right? But if there's a genuine want or need behind that, to and an understanding that they want to try and that they should be trying and that there is something big about this. But I sort of also struggle with people who, so you say you there's a lack of general education about this country's history in this country. What I'm trying to say is that people were beaten for speaking this language.
Yes.
And then you had a generation of people whose language it was not having that language. And for them, it was also a struggle, an embarrassment, a fear to begin that journey again. And almost I sort of, when I see somebody who perhaps has a lot of privilege and does have time to, you know, do Māori language classes or that sort of thing, but also, for example, Mark Richardson, who said on air he had an interaction with somebody where he said something and then he got it wrong and he was so embarrassed that he didn't want to try it again. I sort of have little sympathy there because I'm like, actually, your whakamā is very, very little to somebody who has historical trauma connected to this loss of language.
I think it does, and I think it's a really good point. I think it's a really good point. I've heard that quite a bit too, that I tried and then I was told I got it wrong and so I'm not going to do it again. And as you point, well, you're dealing with a generation's effectively had the language ripped out from them, and then in some cases sees the descendants of the people who did that learning the language in a better than them, and that must be hard. So you've got all that mamai around that. Mm. So I do understand that, totally understand that. I do think though that we need to acknowledge that that learning a language and using a language that you're not familiar with is going to be nerve-wracking, but get over it and do it, because you'll largely get support and you can take a couple of knockbacks. I did a mihi whakatau the other day, and Scotty Morrison, very, very supportive, and said, that was great. And but he said, there was a thing you did there where you welcomed people on your own side. And you wouldn't do that in a more formal ōkawa setting. You're supposed to only, if you're going to mihi to someone on your own side, talk about them in the third person. Now, I didn't know that.
Mm.
So, but that's fascinating to me, and I learned that, you know. And he said, it's great you did it in safe environments, no taniwha here, that's fine. But on a marae where there might be a bit of that, people could be, a little bit horokuku, I suppose, or reluctant to hear you do that. So that's a good lesson. I didn't go, oh my god, I've got it wrong,
I quit.
I quit now. So if you're gonna do it, then we all make mistakes.
That's part of learning anything new, right?
Yeah, you don't give up because
making those mistakes, no. and acknowledging that, yeah, you're not going to be an expert immediately.
Totally. Mm. Yes.
Okay, back to the radio. So when there was that kind of initial, you said that you have been doing general intros and Māori phrases and that sort of thing for a long time. When you started to kind of implement more complex language, I suppose, in your own intros, was there pushback from your own workplace, or were they quite receptive?
There wasn't pushback from my workplace, certainly not formally. There were a couple of sort of people and comments I heard who thought we were going a bit far with it. But in general, there was support, and there was a lot of support from the top. You know, a lot of support from Paul Thompson, who's been hugely supportive of this. There was a lot of amu amu from sections of the audience. It was extraordinary. Once it goes from kia ora to saying the names and days of the week and the date, you know, even that, some people freaked out, completely freaked out.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, they really did, and you would get an avalanche. It was, and a couple of times it was quite confronting, you know, because you do a mihi at the top of the hour, and you would literally, we're sitting in front of these computers here in the studios at BFM, but in Radio New Zealand, just across the road, I have the screens up so I can see the social media and I can see the texts that are coming in and the emails, because we have to use them for whakahoki kōrero, or the feedback that we might read out at times. And you would literally get sort of a whole wave of, 15 texts saying revolting things, you know. What is it? Gibberish, sounds like a turkey gobble and that sort of thing, and worse that I don't want to repeat.
Fair enough.
You know, some really dreadful stuff that you think, man, where are you? What are you?
Yeah.
You know, who are you? And yeah, you'd be like, wow.
My question around it was that your response, though, to that pushback, I guess, or... I guess racism, really, from listeners. You were very straightforward in I suppose denouncing those views that believe Te Reo Māori has no place on national radio, or at least you were very kind of, you came across as quite strong and comfortable in your position in saying, well, that's not going to stop me because this is more important.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I think that's right. And it, like we were saying before, well, hey, think of the people and the generations who've really put their necks on the line. I'm not painting myself as any, more than a blade of grass in that forest, so gee, if they were willing to do that for the language, then what's taking some flack from some people who've sent in some text messages? I do say that a couple of times I was like, oh gee, this is going to be pretty tough. But I thought, oh well, bugger it, basically. I've got the mic. If people want to take it off me, and then that's fine, but I'm going to do this. And what, no matter what I do in broadcasting or media and in life, probably it's going to be part of my life. It's a lifelong journey for me, for however long I've got left on the planet. I'll be learning, and I'll never be an expert. I'll be learning, but I see this as a lifelong journey, and I'll weave it into my life. And if that means giving me a mic, then people need to know that will come with using the reel where I can and where it's where I feel it's appropriate to do it within my own skill range. And I'll do that in a speech, even if it's to a Rotary Club. I'll start with a mihi, So if they don't want to hear it, then that's cool. Mm-hmm. But that's what I'll do.
We probably don't get the same amount of text coming in as you guys because we're much smaller. But you do get that. You do get those responses where they're just like, just actually quite explicitly violent in saying that they're not happy with this. And we ignore those because actually what we do get is probably five times more responses that are far more positive and far more encouraging, that sort of thing. Have you also had those responses?
Absolutely. And we do have a lot of support and a lot of people getting in touch on a regular basis saying that they appreciate it. And I don't know whether it's just that those people who didn't like it have switched off or just stopped complaining, but I really did notice there's a massive change. I mean, what I tended to do was, I pushed it to a certain level and would weather the feedback, and then we'd go a bit further when that died down and go a bit further. And we kind of settled into a pattern of usage now, and I don't get that now. I get a few, every day I get a couple, but it feels like the tide has changed on that.
That's sort of a statement in itself of change, right?
It is.
Where you are going to immediately come across massive pushback, but you stick with it, you maintain it, people will shift.
Totally. And that's what I mean. We can't find a better word in English. There might be a better word in the reo for normalisation, right? That Nida Glavish saying kia ora all those years ago. You know, TV1 and TV3 saying kia ora. I know it's small, but initially people push back about that. And the more you do it and the more you use, the more normal it becomes, and that's part of the journey, right?
The normalisation point is interesting, though, because if you use the example that Māori itself wasn't a word until Pākehā arrived, because Māori had no need to identify themselves.
And it kind of almost means normal, doesn't
it? And it does.
If you say, why Māori to your kids, then they'll be getting plain water.
Fresh water, that's right. That's right. It is because it's normal.
Yeah, because you don't have anyone else to distinguish you from. So it is what it is. So, but yeah, that's a good point, actually. Mm.
So I guess, yeah, if you are, while you're challenging your own worldview and the Eurocentric worldview, which normalizes a certain group, if you look beyond that and just the simple word in
That's
itself.
Right.
I'm going to move into a bit of some whakahihi stuff. Mm-hmm. You were recently honoured for your work at the latest Māori Language Awards. What do you think of this?
Yeah, the cliche is it was humbled, but, you know, to stand on stage with those people and have a waata tautoko, you know, after speaking and getting that award, well, it's pretty special. Really special. And just more broadly too, what fits into it, the support that I've had from Māori institutions, Māori broadcasters, just advocates for the language has been huge. The only pushback I've ever had is from Pākehā. Now there might be some Māori out there who say, well, it's this Pākehā guy from Christchurch speaking Māori. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. That's cool. The amount of support I've had has just been massive. And so to get that was really kept a year in which that's been probably the most important aspect of my work this year. You know, using it on the radio. Yeah, put a bit of thought into how to weave it in, because it's not that easy in a mainly English program.
It's not.
You know?
It's really not.
We actually even did a couple of interviews that were fully in the real, not for all of it. We would translate it and stuff, and mine's a bit halting, but, you know, can't go too far. You know, they were live interviews in the reel, so that was pretty cool. So to get an acknowledgement like that was it was awesome. Mm. Yeah.
You mentioned the possibility of Māori people being a bit sceptical about it, and that's something I thought a lot about, and because I want to go into this next. We are both Pākehā.
Mm.
Well, I call myself Pākehā. I don't know if you say Pākehā.
Yeah. Yep.
And the sort of distinction there between Pākehā and New Zealand European, but we also both have mics at our disposal. We're both on a platform, that sort of thing. And I too often acknowledge the privilege that I've had in having te reo Māori as my first language. And I say that, it's a bit ironic though, because obviously I had no choice in the matter. but the idea that I grew up with te reo when a lot of Māori kids don't grow up with the deal, and yeah, the privilege that I carry in that, and acknowledging that that's a difficult point for some people, where I sort of feel, one, yeah, how why do I get to know it when this is your language and you don't know it, one, and then what do you do about that? I have a position again of privilege where I'm a broadcaster, and what do I do about that?
Yeah, and I think that's really well laid out. And my own response, and it's just a personal one, is it isn't so much the privilege, because you, as you pointed out there, didn't have a choice in that matter. And it's the same with a lot of privilege in life. It isn't that, it's what you do with it, right? So there's no point being given privilege. The worst thing you can do is then waste it. That's my view. Look, if you were born into a certain family, that's not your choice, was it? You don't choose those things. If you're born into a family, the genes, the suburb that you're born into, we all know that those things have a massive impact on life, right? But if you're going to then turn around and waste that, then I reckon that's the greater sin. So for me, rather than beating yourself up about that, you're better to just go, well, I've been lucky enough to have these advantages. What am I going to do with this? And how does this progress things. That's what I reckon. And so, you know, if you've got it, use it, share it, you know.
That sort of follows quite nicely into my next point, because I was going to say I was a finalist at the awards, but I thought for a bit before actually accepting the nomination itself, whether I deserved to be nominated, whether I should be recognised for doing sort of the bare minimum of what we could be doing in our positions, and something that I believe is just, again, normal, like this should just be normal, using the basics, using correct pronunciation, that sort of thing. I ended up going through with it to acknowledge the efforts by my workplace as well, and that commitment, and the sort of as also an opportunity to push that conversation, I suppose. But where do you think the line is in terms of the bare minimum as opposed to what we could or should be doing? I guess we have sort of covered this, but
I just think that I don't think there are lines. I think you end up with people, you know, because behind any strategy and behind any equipment and microphone is a person who's decided this is what I want to do, or this is how I'm going to do it. And I think that's where we get, we get cut through, is when someone decides, oh, you know, I'm going to do this, and they take a risk and maybe they fail. You know, I think, you know, some of the best things in this are sort of, you know, organic. Once you start saying, you know, it's a bit like, I don't know, you see your emails from the public service and they all start kia ora and ngamahi, yeah. And that's okay. That's all right. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but you know, there's a bit of a box ticking public service thing. I've started my email with kia ora then, and that's kind of enough. And so once you start trying to say, well, here's the minimum and here's the thing, you get into, even unwittingly, you can get into that, oh, well, here's the broccoli and here's the reo Māori for the day, and I've got to eat this because it's good for me. And when you have people who are just coming at it from different angles, look at what Alien Weaponry do. Isn't that cool? You know, thrash metal with the reo. And you're like, oh, well, this is interesting. It's just another angle on it, and it's fun, and it's passionate, and it's out there. So that's what I would. That's what I like to see is people picking it up for because they're passionate and interested in it and trying to weave it into whatever life they
in their
have.
Own space.
I know what you're saying. Like, you know, you get, are you getting rewarded just for turning up and doing your day job? I understand that. I try not to overthink some of these things too much. For me, Te Tauira Whiri said, hey, we'd like to give you this award. We like what you've done. I'm like, thanks
Fuck
very much.
Yeah.
Tēnā koe. Yeah, so, you know, and sure, there'd be some amu-amu, there'd be some people saying, well, why has he got this tohu when I've been doing it? That's fine. Kawe mā harahara. No worries.
I guess, I hadn't actually known about the Māori Language Awards before that, and now I'm stoked because I know, and actually they'll keep going and more people will be honoured.
It was an awesome night though, wasn't it?
It was.
You
was
know,
beautiful.
I have to say, I've sat through some TV and radio awards over the years, and Te Mutunga Ke Mai o Te Maraki, you know, they've been boring as. And, you know, that was awesome. All in the reo. They had the mics if you wanted to dip into the English. I braved it and I didn't get all of it, but for some of them I got quite a lot of it. And that was awesome listening to that. And, it was a cool night.
So cool. Very. And you're right, that the kaupapa of being full immersion for the whole night. It also gives, my dad came along and he's learning, right? But he made the choice also not to listen to the translation, just so he could see where...
Wasn't it a cool celebration of what we could be? How interesting we could be.
Absolutely.
As a country. We can do this, you know.
Absolutely.
We can have a whole event, you know, all in the reo. And no, you know, there was no hesitation.
No qualms.
And actually, if people wanted to get up, because not, you know, if people want to get up and speak English, that was fine too. That's okay. But couldn't we be a fascinating country? We'd be so much more interesting, wouldn't we?
That's
my thing. You know,
we've got a long way to go before
we do. But, I mean, that's kind of that's kind of my vision. And I just think it would be just so cool if we were genuinely a bilingual country and we were flicking around, weaving it in and out. That's okay, you know, some of us would be better than others, but it'd be all right.
That's a really good point though, the genuineness of it and the idea that we do like to uphold ourselves as bicultural. But we're not.
No,
really.
I've nicked this analogy a few times from Calvin Davis. I think he might have nicked it from someone else. And I've got no particular barrier to push for him, but it's just a good analogy. He talks about this bridge between Te Ao Māori and Te Ao Pākehā, and he says that, you know, for much of the time, Māori have been crossing over that bridge, right? And too few Pākehā have gone the other way. And I think he's right. Like, hey, not asking too much, but do you want to come across to the other to the bridge and see, and give it a go?
I've heard this analogy as well, and also I think they developed it in a way that was that Māori are the bridge, and they have been walked over in that sense, and they're the ones carrying it, right?
Yeah, well, that takes it on a step further.
Okay, lost my train of thought now.
That was my fault. No. I derailed you with the bridge analogy.
No. No, that's all good. It was going to be...
We can edit out the pause, so us look more eloquent than we are. That's right.
There is a huge demand for reo lessons now. And actually, Māori have been fighting for this for a long time and saying this for a long time. Why do you think it's happening, finally?
Yeah, there is. You know what? For me, this is, you know, I go to work and I do put these work into doing these political interviews and doing all this stuff on Morning Report. And when I get to a social function or a party or just people running into me in the street, all they want to talk to me about is, oh, your use of Te Reo Māori on the radio. So, which is cool for me. But I just think that we're at a point where there's a lot of interest, you know. There's, and it must be a convergence of things. I mean, you know, these things come along, the stars align, and I think people, there's a real passion for it now, and it's coming out from all sorts of interesting angles. I always find it interesting when the commercial world starts to act, when Spark's getting really involved, when I see a billboard with mahi on it, you know, a word like work, which, you know, a few years ago, this would have been needed to be translated, or a Herald story, which about Arahui somewhere, which has five or six Māori words which aren't translated anymore. And I just think we're at a point where there's a lot more hunger for it. Then you go into to lessons, so people want, that's their gateway mainly, isn't it? Like, because they might not have family who speak the reo at all, and this is where they want to get into it. So you're getting a lot of demand for these lessons. There was a guy, Anton Matthews, in Christchurch, who owns a restaurant, I think, and he put up some reo lessons in Ōtautahi and had about 600 people turn up. He was honoured on the night.
I sat next to him on the night.
He's awesome, actually.
He's so awesome, and I've interviewed him before for BFM, and we clicked after my video had gone up, and he realised the logo, and I was like, oh, you're the fish guy.
Yeah.
But he was actually at the table, because we had a couple of other finalists who weren't real speakers. He was teaching them some phrases on the night.
Like, on the night, just, yeah.
That's here awesome. You go, this is something you can take away.
And then we run into the issue of the demand for the courses. And there's lots of issues to do with that too, you know, and you've touched on some of them. You know, there's a lot of Pākehā lining up for those. Who's missing out? And yeah, so there's all that. That's all real. It's cool though, isn't it, that there's a lot of interest. That's great. And then we get into this chicken and egg thing with the stage that we're at, on revitalising the language is, you know, there's a lot of interest and there aren't enough teachers because the language has been taken away from a lot of people over the last, you know, many decades. I hope that will balance out, and we'll get to a point where there's a, you know, a smoother line, if you like, of teachers and experts to pass on what they know. And I know it's the same conversations in schools about finding teachers. It's not limited only to the deal, I know. It's a broader conversation, but yeah, there's going to be a bit of a backlog or a bit of a blockage in the pipe there before we get those experts coming through, I guess.
We do have to sort of go because I've also kept you for much longer than I said I would. I will finish with this though. Because I want to use an example. I feel very lucky because I'm a news director here, so I oversee kind of what is happening and what stories get put out and how they write those stories. And what I've done a lot, not only what we've done is have the deal and correct pronunciation, but, you know, what is the next step after the language? Because like we were talking about, you have the language which opens up the world view, right? So are we talking... A lot of my study as well was looking at the way Māori issues are framed in the media and mainstream media, which is hugely problematic and has been for a long time. And for example, there was a story earlier this year that came out about schools that had, you know, misused funding, and out of like a number of schools, something upwards of 20, there were, I think, 3 or 4 kura kaupapa, but those were the schools that they focused on, one, and they focused on it because the school had taken a trip to Rarotonga, which is, in a mainstream view, seen as a holiday. Yeah. But actually, so what I did was have a conversation with our volleys who were writing the story and saying, look, Rarotonga actually historically is where Māori people came from. Yeah. It's a whakapapa relationship, and that in itself, travelling back to that land, is hugely important in that sense. And it's a history trip. It's a language trip.
The language isn't that different.
All of those things. So how does mainstream get to justify what an educational trip is if they don't understand, you know, the merit of it?
Yeah, totally. And I think this question is related to language as well, and I'll get to that in a second. I think you're totally right that the way that, I have to say, we in the mainstream media have treated a lot of Māori issues, and the way that Māori have been represented in the media has been poor. You know, a lot of focus on sport, a lot of focus on crime, a lot of focus on any Māori organisation that seemed to have wasted money. And look, you know, are you going to put that message out again and again and again? Well, don't be surprised that people have some of these perceptions that people have. And it goes into the same about policing and about which cars get stopped and all that. So there's a lot in that, and the media has a big responsibility in that. And here's hopefully a positive note to end on that does relate to the language. We claim in this country that we're, you know, a bicultural country, and that, you know, we'll go overseas and promote our race relations and stuff. Oh, in New Zealand, we all live together. Fact is that in many ways we don't, and we can be quite separate. And one of the cool things about learning the language is you are going to necessarily come into contact and talk to a lot more Māori, make Māori friends. You're going to hear those stories, and you're going to just be more involved in that world. And the more you do that, and the more media people do that, the more people do that in general, the more you actually understand, the less like you are to go, oh yeah, but they're always wasting money, or, you know. I mean, I just think it's part of understanding, and I think the language is a great place to start, and it's a great entry point. And I think that that's one of the positive things. So not only will you learn this beautiful language to a degree, and it's a hard journey, but hey, you might understand. We might get to understand each other a lot more.
Nei rā te mihi ki a koe, Matua. Thank you for coming in today.
Nā mihi ki a koe.